Here I lie, bereft of breath, because a cough carried me off. Then a coffin they carried me off in.
All the charms of the city may be all right for some, but it sure ain't as pretty as the place where I come from. I know I'm kind of corny, and maybe I'm just dumb, but the charms of the city ain't for me. Oh, I live in a house that's a mile up to the top, and it's chock full of people with faces like a mop. And if you say good morning, they'll holler for a cop. The charms of the city ain't for me.
Welcome to Mr. Ron's Basement. This is Mr. Ron, and you are in the basement. We were just listening to Carson Robinson and his World War II era V-disc, The Charms of the City Ain't For Me. Do join us today as we hear about the charms of a great big city of Boston. So don't touch that iPod. We'll be right back. This week we are reading from George Horatio Derby's posthumously published 1865 collection, The Squeebob Papers by John Phoenix. Of course, Squeebob and Phoenix were both pen names of Derby's. In today's piece, Squeebob takes a little trip to Boston. The story is called Boston, a Moral City. It is Sunday in Boston. I have been sitting in my room, number 78 Tremont House, by the window, which commands a cheerful view of a graveyard, musing on various matters and things in a solemn state of mind, well befitting the place and the occasion. 17 inches of snow fell last night, and Boston looks white like the island of Ichabod, and to the full as desolate. Through the hollow and reverberating passages of this ancient building, around the corners of the sinuous streets, from each door and window in every private and public building, and from the houses of God, resounds the peculiar, sharp, hacking cough of the population of Boston. Every soul of them has it. It is the disease of the country. When I meet an acquaintance in the street, I abstain from the usual greeting and invariably say, "How is your cough?" And the reply invariably is, "About the same." Coughing and the ancient pastime of hawking, following by expectoration, are the principal amusements in this cold city. In the graveyard beneath my window, on a slate tombstone, may be found, I am informed, the following touching inscription: "Here I lie, bereft of breath, because a cough carried me off. Then a coffin they carried me off in." Which I doubt not describes the case of the majority of the silent incumbents of that place of rest. The Tremont House is in many respects a good institution. It is perfectly clean and well arranged. The attendance is good and the fodder excellent, but there is an indescribable air of gloom and solemnity pervades the entire establishment, well suited to Boston, but chilling to a stranger to the last degree. The waiters, dressed in black with white neckcloths, move silently and sadly about the tables, looking like so many Methodist ministers with 13 children, 400 a year, and 2 donation parties. The man in the office never smiles in any point of view. A large Bible with the name of the house stamped upon it in gilt letters to prevent religious strangers from bottling it lies on every table, and the chambermaids attend family prayers in the basement. All is grand, gloomy, and it must be confessed, exceedingly peculiar. I have attempted but 2 jokes in this solemn place, and they fell like the flakes of snow, silent and unnoticed. An unfortunate individual in the reading room last evening was seized with an unusually violent fit of coughing, which, if a man could by any possibility be turned inside out, would have done it. And as a partial cessation of it occurred, with his hair standing on end, he had coughed his hat off, his face glowing with exertion and the tears standing in his unhappy eyes, he very naturally gave vent to a profane execration. Everybody looked shocked. I remarked in an audible tone to my companion that the exclamation was a cofferdam, an admirable contrivance for raising obstructions from the bottom of streams, and probably adopted by the gentleman to clear his throat. but no one laughed, and I incontinently went to bed. This morning, on arising, I discovered that my boots, left outside the door to be embellished with blacking, had, like those of Bombastes, not been displaced. So I said to the porter, a man of grave and solemn aspect, "You have a very honest set of people about this house." "Why?" said the porter, with a somewhat startled expression. "Because," I rejoined, "I left my boots outside my door last night, and find this morning no one has touched them. That man walked off all slow and stately, and never knew that I had been humorous. Disappointments have been my lot in life. I remember in early childhood going to the theater to see Mrs. W.H. Smith appear in two pieces. The bill said she would do it, and she came on stage perfectly whole and entire, like any other lady. Upon the whole, it was my impression that Boston is a dull, gloomy, precise, and solemn city, which I take to be owing entirely to the intense cold that prevails there in the winter, which chills and freezes up the warmer nature of the inhabitants, who don't have time to get thawed out before the cold comes back again. I have met many Bostonians in more genial climates who appeared to be very hearty and agreeable fellows. I took a short ride yesterday in the Metropolitan Railroad cars, which are dragged by horsepower from the Tremont House to Roxbury. The only other occupant of my car was a young and lovely female in deep mourning. She wore a heavy black veil, and her thick and auburn hair was gathered up on each side of her face beneath a spotless cap, a widow's cap of snowy muslin. I had always a feeling for widows. Young and pretty widows, particularly, always excite my deepest interest and sympathy. I gazed with moistened eye on the sweet specimen before me, so young, so beautiful, I thought, and alas, what suffering she has experienced. I pictured to myself her devotion to her husband during his last illness, the untiring watchfulness with which she hung over his pillow, the unwearying and self-sacrificing spirit with which she hoped on, hoped ever, till in despite of her care, her love, he sank forever, and her agonized shriek rang in my ear as with hands clasped and upturned eye she felt that he was dead. Her dream of life was over, her strength was gone, her heart was broken. The young widow had been regarding me earnestly during this time, and probably imagined what was passing in my mind, for throwing her veil over her hat, she turned partly around toward me, and looking steadfastly in my face, she winked her eye. Yes, sir, she winked her eye at me, the moral phoenix, and I rose from my ashes and left the Metropolitan car and returned to the Tremont House. They don't have theatrical performances in Boston on Saturday evenings. The theaters open at 3 o'clock p.m., and the performance is over at 6. Thalberg was allowed to give a concert here last evening, however. He was practicing a little this morning also on the piano when a message came from a serious family in the next room begging him not to play dancing tunes. He didn't. I had intended to have written to you more at length, but am off to New Orleans directly and must pack my trunk. Boston is a great place. I am sorry I hadn't time to go and see the monastery presided over by Abbot Lawrence that was burned by the Orange Men. Yours truly and respectfully, John Phoenix.
All the charms of the city ain't for me. Ain't for me,
ain't for me,
ain't for me,
ain't for me.
All the charms of the city ain't for me,
ain't for me.
All the subways are crowded everywhere I go, and that big town aroma is wafted to and fro. Garlic, fish, and onions, and plain B.O. The charms of the city ain't for me.